Mr. Cameron, reel 5. Now, you left spurn point, and you, then you started, and the 295 battery was reformed from the scattered troops. And you started to move round Yorkshire, Dewsbury, 4 sites round Leeds, 2 sites round Huddersfield. Now, you don't remember those places specifically, do you, much? Now, what was life like during this time? Was we made Limber Gunner during this time?
Yes, that built up from once we came onto the various static sites, which was scattered out of the country, there was, say, more dukes, because it was more fatigued, more cleaning, more people make camp like that, more ammunition supply. But we were occasionally getting night raids. We turned out that we fired even a couple of shots, and we did a whole lot of cleaning after that.
The guns.
Now we, myself and Robbie, my old mate, probably by that time I was on number 4, and he was on number 3, and we were given most of the duties cleaning. I would say it was from a background, but we used to hard work and not having it. Stop. We used the drafting, hard drafting, where some of these lads, they worked the rocks, basically. They didn't have the same push. As far as I'd say, it's real hard work. And we were prepared to get there and work hard. It was better than lying around the camp or sport washing or something like that. We preferred to be on the bench. So we finished it practically as Limber Gunners. Not in charge of, but we were the bloke, we were the man that the gun number 1 sent to do the gun maintenance. He probably sent one to help us with us for 3 days, but we had to do the proper maintenance. At the top of the aisle, we checked the buffers and things like that, use a chronometer to check that the angle was checked on the gun. Things that we had learned how to do, and lads working with us loved ones.
Now, you didn't have to fire much, even during the Sheffield Blitz and things like that,
when the Sheffield Blitz was on, we were at, I think it was at Leeds, around Leeds area, certainly, so we didn't catch much of it at all. We used to just get the occasional night, mainly night time. I don't remember any day after a girl apart from turnouts, but not firing, when there was raids in the vicinity, say, towards the coast or other places. But night time, you'd always get the odd plane coming over that you might have got scattered from one of the big raids and come over, and you might get them in within our range. Then we'd fire 2 or 3 shots off, and that was it.
I presume you didn't hit anything.
No, at least not that I know of. I think it was this group. You see, when a thing like that happened, 295, that we had two troops where we were, and the other two would be on another strike. we'd open up together, 186 battery, which was another part of the 96 regiment. They had a couple of batteries, they would be firing. There'd be 294 batteries. So actually, if a plane came across, you would have about 6, 8, 10 gun sites engaging at one time.
Yeah.
If anything happened, it would just be too heavy.
How many guns were there in the troop?
4 guns to a troop.
And were they 3.7s again by now?
At that time, on the different sites, the guns varied. At Hunslet, we had 4.5s. Now they were a bigger measure again. They had a big metal cooler over the front. But basically, the gun drill was exactly the same. Needed a couple of more ammunition numbers or something. But the duties as far as being weighing and such were exactly the same. As long as that was a bigger gun and had a higher range.
So the guns stayed put and you moved?
The guns stayed put.
And you just took over whatever you got when you got there?
Oh yes, as a unit. When we moved as a unit, there would be the static guns that were cemented into the ground.
Were there different types of shell you'd fire depending on range or target or anything?
With the high explosive shell, you had a fuse cap in the nose, and we used the key to set whatever fuse was given from the instruments. Which had the trigger bearing, which had the bearing, which was the fact itself that they closed. You might stop there and it would be inspired by a gun setter, the fuse setter would set it fused to what was given from the
and that would determine what height it went off at, would it?
That would determine the height of the fuse setter was at.
Now, was that done by some sort of barometric thing, or was it just time from the gun?
It was done by the instruments calculating where the hold of the four guns.
No, I get that, but I mean, how did the fuse work? Was the fuse just a time fuse or a
time fuse?
Not a height fuse.
Actually, it wouldn't be a height fuse because if you set it to 3, it went off quicker than it did if you set it to 4. So depending on the height that the predictors. They had calculated what height they wanted the gun to fire, then they would give that number of fuse. So you just set your fuse to whatever height they said, and that would give you the where it was supposed to explode. The range with 3.7s, I think, was a ceiling of 30,000 feet. With 4.7s, what, 40,000, I think. But I'm only guessing at that now because it's so long ago.
Now, you got some promotion during this period, didn't you? You started to get some promotion.
The first got played lunch from the vehicle. It was just out of Leeds. Somewhere out of Leeds. Something to do about it. On another side, we played lunch from the vehicle. Oh, they enjoyed it again.
And what did
the spell of Lindell done? Because I think we were beginning to realise that we knew it, didn't we? And we were. So we made lunch from the beers. We made the last month pay lunch from the beers.
And what responsibilities or duties did that give you?
Very first, as soon as I. In fact, I haven't even so much rifle. I was put in charge of number 4. Yeah, I've been in the gun. The following day, we were visited by General Frederick Pyle, what he used to call all emeralds. He was in charge of the anti-aircraft throughout Great Britain. And our there, the local actman, Pyle Lance Bombardier, in charge of the through the site and then come and I stand there number four run, went through any fuel inspection, sir.
Had you known he was coming?
We hadn't had a, we didn't get to know what the air was promoted. We knew he was coming the next day. Very little preparation for it.
Was it a thorough inspection he made, or just a...
No, I think it was more a show of the flag, because it's sort of thing. He used to do it all the time. So he keep it, show the boys at the park, the team, that sort of thing.
And what was your job as Lance Bombardier then? You were in charge of number four gun?
So I think it was from the beginning then. I think there'd been some transfers or something. Forget the circumstances, but anyway,
so you were number one?
I was number one from, as a Lance Bombardier, which was a bit unusual because normally it was a Bombardier at least who was in charge of the gun for a two strike. Whatever happened, I don't know. But I think we were number four gun as soon as I was promoted. And also we've been in all the lesson. Johnny Barry. Now, he moved on somewhere. Whether he got promoted or whatever, I don't know. Anyway, I took over as number one on that book as a Lance Bombardier.
Did that change how you got on with the lads?
Not necessarily, not to mind of it anyway. I had to take charge. I had to. Had to be a bit different, obviously. That would have meant that you've got no discipline otherwise. I had to make sure that he done what he was supposed to do. But in, by that time, being a limber gunner, they were usually doing what I told them in any case. Because the army discipline that I got used to in later years, it was a teamwork thing by then. If you knew your job, you knew respected by it, and you understood and you did what it was. It was different.
Now, and then you got made Bombardier.
Yeah, I think it must have been 12 months later. Bombardier, and carried on doing the same job. But as gun number one. The same routine in charge of the gun. Relaying orders, you see. When you got the orders, they'd ring the alarm, especially during the night. They'd go embarrassingly in the huts. They'd go dash home, grab what you call dash home. They'd be here. They all used to lie, but they're very there. You know, you'd bump into side of your bed and you'd go cold and everything. It's the sling of your arm, dash away up with the guns. You'd say, take post, and boys, and he would be on the guns. And then, as soon as you got that done, there was always somebody in the command post in any case. So, number four gun, ready, sir. That let them know that there was a full team on number four, and then the reports are coming through the group one, two, three, so on. And when they were all ready, then, you see, every report at the command post, then they knew that they could put the whole troop in action. They were waiting then for the target. Instruments pick the target up, or what was relayed by that time, they had this radar and certain things that we didn't know much about, but they were picking up by radar and they were falling through from various other places, and that was locating the instruments. And if they got a target, usually you could hear them, of course, but if you heard a target, then it was in the vicinity. It wouldn't be long before you get engaged. And then you'd be fused so fire. And as you fire to a full load, cease firing. Lest you be. You might be out now, you might be out all night. You might be out all night and never fire shut. The same thing is there.
But there wasn't much bombing in your area then, while you were there.
We were very lucky. We never had any trouble apart from that firing the odd few rounds, which never gave them any trouble, and it only made more work.
you want a more active war? I mean, you were coming up to being posted overseas, but did you fancy?
I always did, but it wasn't the thing. We were reluctant, very reluctant to let NCOs go. As far as, at that time, anyway, Grundy and I put in that this would be the last Bombardier at the time. And there was a thing came in orders where they wanted in the Air Force, they wanted wireless operated air gas, but they didn't want those jeans. Me and him applied, and that was the only thing that they ever spoke to. We had applied before them overseas posted. Nothing come of it. We applied when they first started the Paris. It was one vote from our troops. But it went away on that day. They applied. The Yorks had had. And so much more, they were only visiting us once. And that was when we were forming the palace. We applied for that. When we applied for this WOAG job, they let us go, me and Jimmy, and we traveled across the other side of the Mersey from Liverpool. There's a big place, a hook, just somewhere. It's a great big. So we got there, and put in on an evening, and they were all the civilians.
You'd come over from Yorkshire to Liverpool.
And they put us in this hut, said, "Well, we sleep there tonight, and go to wait for morning." So things like had a meal, and of course, all these kids. Maybe a year younger than us then, but there were civilians all over the city protest that were throwing uniforms type something. Slammed the bed down, you know, the blankets had a bed made in no time, and they were watching us and tried to copy. We got a headstone, we went screaming. And got up in the morning, of course, we just folded our blankets up, slapped them, like neat formation there, and left them. These kids there didn't have a clue, you know, just seeing them at the beach. They took us on parade, and they brought the lads on parade. And they just, there's a white sign. The tension was on, too, it was still the tension. Well, anyway, the gist of the thing was, is now that you're here, there's an Air Force officer, this. We no longer need the wireless operator aircraft, but we do need fighter pilots. Now this was just, it must have been late 40 or something, you know, after the battle of Britain. And we needed, finally, what I learned since. So those of you who want to carry on and try, the fighter pilots, words to that effect, you know. You stand fast, remain there, dismiss back to your own. So, you probably have the same idea as me. My idea of a fighter pilot there is going to be a whole lot of schooling and maths and so on. You know, I don't know, flying in a little shape, you know. It's taken a bit much out of that. I'm a working class lad. Never had any more education than that. No, I left school at 14. I'm going to have a job start looking at the air and all that, maths and things like that. Waste of time. He got that and he was finished. So he fell out, and he returned to Europe and carried on. But we could have realised afterwards, we could have stood there, and we could have finished with this fight of pirates because some of them are so. But we're fighter pilots, absolutely serious. Yeah. Serious pilot, but he can't. Once a year long, we were doing it. And they were pushing him through. He needed them. It didn't matter your ability, you know, you probably had a hell of a reasonable amount of ability, but the bulk of them could be trained to the extent that they could fly. So he was a fighter pilot, it's a different thing.
So you went back to unit. Now, all this time, you were in Yorkshire quite a while, nearly 2 years.
The bulk of our time, remember being out of Yorkshire and being a pointed on the ships. It was all around Yorkshire.
Was there any special incidents in that time, or was it just this sort of routine you were talking about?
Well, pretty much like what I said, there was a time, for some reason or other, some of us were across a train, but that was an earlier one. And then again, we didn't have lunch. We had the most of the stuff that we got with. But that was a brief. It was still Yorkshire, but it was a sort of moving on why I didn't understand. But before we finally got settled on the proper main gun sites.
But once you were on them sites, that was it. There's nothing else to tell, really.
All of them were there, but they just spent the time. And the next bit of the field, and they had a great pavilion on there. They could get it in views, but they weren't off the camp there. You see, you could be on the cricket field, and if the alarm sounded, you could be on the ground just as quick as you could from our edge. So in the summertime, we spent a lot of time there, and I was very good at doing it. Shacks, Haruza, the old Karan, the guest is for everybody, big tea, sat with him. And Shack got to be one of my mates. He was killed in Northern Italy, but he was all-round sports, quite a lad. Football, rugby, cricket, cricket especially. When we were at Holmeswood, he guessed it for Holmeswood rugby team. When we were at Ormondbury, he guessed it for Ormondbury cricket team. And he was around, he was in his 20s, but he was bald. You know, and that was different. He was a big fella, had shoulders for his name, but a little bit wider. But he was bald. More bold than I am now. And I'm come up 71. For a lad to be in his 20s, and we're bold, just the fringe he had, you know, you would have thought it'd be embarrassing. Chuck was never embarrassed. That's why I'm not embarrassed. It was never bothered me being bold, because it's so sharp as a youngster, in amongst a bunch of youngsters. You know, and it never turned the hair on him, he had not turned the meat. It was a thing of itself.
Now, another one who was with, that comes on when we come on the DLI, was Frank Johnson, I think.
Frank Johnson.
What do you remember of him?
At a particular time I'm talking about, Frank was a sergeant. He was a right field man. And do you believe he worked in the Yorkshire Penny Bank? He was made up Sergeant Clerigus, tactical sergeant from me joining the 295.
Now, he was to be an officer in the 16th later on, and he was killed in the war. What was he like as a sergeant? It's a different view of it.
You couldn't say there were any disciplinarians amongst those folks. But there were some who could keep control better than others. And Frank was one of those. Without being nasty or pushy or anything like that, Frank could do that. And he sort of, he had leadership qualities from the beginning, you might say. As a sergeant, he was one of the lads, apart from the fact that he had their spirit there, and when it came to the push, he knew that he was a gaffer.
Now, you were posted overseas, or mobilised to go overseas, and in, I think, June 42, I think you told me last
year. Somewhere around there, yes.
When did you first hear you were going overseas, and how did you feel?
It's very difficult to say that. I felt that I was pretty pleased about it, because it was a monotony as far as we were concerned. Being in this country, reading about all the action in other places, and we were, like I say, we were the same. I had a brother of fighting in the desert, and I had cars in different parts of the world, and I got news of different things happening. I used to visit you. Because of this, you know, I've got a good number here, but I could have been with them. So some of them went up to the farm, some of the lads came up to them. Because you used to hear local news from back home, so-and-so would be killed, so-and-so would be killed. And he used to, and what they used to send me the local papers.
So you were happy enough as you were, but you felt you ought to go.
Wrong doing what we had joined to do. There was a war going on out there, but it wasn't the human monster.
Even though it was more dangerous and you were safer off and better off where you were, you still...
Oh, yes. I think it would have been different nowadays, but at that age, you wanted to be one of the boys. You wanted to take part. You wanted to be as good as an ex-bloke, if you could get what I mean.
Now, what preparations were made for going off?
Well, going overseas? Mm. Not a great deal that I can remember. All I can remember is that we had a good life. We finished, I don't know which side we went from, but we finished up on a tent camp just out of Sheffield. Actually, halfway between Sheffield and London, a place called Treaty. There was a colony there by the way. We were on the canvas there and we were issued with tropical gear. Of course, that was advisable. We got this sort of short trousers, yeah? The khaki drill stuff and the tunic, the bucket, and the toupee. You know, getting all this, I'd probably send us to Billy Russia or somewhere. That was normal guy, but anyway, he didn't. We had to wrap them up, pack them up, and we went off to Liverpool. But whilst we were treating, we sent across, said, any of these folks want to go and have a look at the colony? They went to him and said to them, we're coming across, Tony, they're going to take us down the pit. So he said, how did he stop on top of me? I wanted to. He took some of the lads down to the cold. I suppose he'd give them a ride in a cage to the one on the shop. Take it with that. I said, no, it came here, but I got away from the really pits.
Now, were you taking your guns with you? I presume not.
No, we just sailed as we rifles, we were issued with rifles. Where we got them from, I don't remember. We had a small arms.
Now, the whole of the 96th Regiment was going.
Yes, the whole of the 96th.
Both batteries.
We embarked on the SS Andes.
Where from?
From Liverpool. Somewhere by Liverpool, I didn't tell you stuff, but it was from Liverpool. Because I can remember. Then we sailed down the Mersey, and somewhere in the distance, somebody said, that's Blackpool Tower. And it was the first time I'd seen it, but I won't get the rest of it in any case. I can't tell the difference where it is on it. You know, as soon as they were coming back,